When Jesus left the temple before he went to the cross, the Bible tells us that he was asked by his disciples to admire the temple, its beauty, its immensity, its antiquity. And after Jesus had looked at the temple, he then made a remark to them that's recorded in verse 4 of chapter 13 when they said, "Tell us, when shall these things be, and what shall be the sign when all these things shall be fulfilled?" Now, their question was predicated upon what Jesus had stated when he said, "Seest thou these great buildings? There shall not be left one stone upon another that shall not be thrown down." And this, of course, was a shock to his listeners, and they said, "When and what? When shall these things be, and what shall be the sign when these things shall be fulfilled?" And that's what we're studying here at North Bryant Baptist Church. When and what? You'll notice the first thing that Jesus said or revealed concerning these questions that were asked, when and what, and we have already looked at them, but briefly, Jesus said, "Now before these stones are torn from one another, before these buildings are destroyed, before the temple is destroyed, many would come saying, 'I am.' There would be wars and rumors of wars. There would be earthquakes and famines. The apostles would be persecuted and would appear before rulers. The truth would be proclaimed to all nations. And they were to allow the gifts that were in existence at that time, that is, spiritual gifts, to guide them, and they would speak words that are recorded now in the Bible as part of its divine revelation. Jesus told them they would be hated for his name's sake." That is, because of his name and their wearing his name, they would be hated of all men. "And that they should endure, and in so enduring they would save their lives." Jesus said, "He that endureth to the end shall be saved." The word that's translated "endure" here is oftentimes translated "patience." And it really means to hold one's ground, to bear up bravely while suffering. And this salvation is not their soul salvation, but it is the salvation of their testimony. They must not ruin their testimony by denouncing their faith, but save their lives by giving them in martyrdom for the cause of Christ. Now we come to the term "the abomination of desolation." Now, some people have the idea that there is a dual application here from the viewpoint of the end times, that is, the Antichrist, the times just prior to the coming of Christ. But what we're studying now has to do with the apostles. It has to do with a period of time from the crucifixion of Christ until just after 70 AD, after the temple has been destroyed by Titus. The abomination of desolation. What a word. Verse 14, "But when ye shall see the abomination of desolation." Now, the statements that are made here is really the key to the end of Israel's being God's kingdom witness. We're not talking about the end of Israel. They did not end, but they became wanderers over the earth after the destruction of the temple by Titus. They did not end as a nation of people. They're still in existence as a nation of people. They occupy this land now under the ensign and the name of Israel. We're not talking about their destruction, but we're talking about the fact that God took the kingdom. That is, he took the work of the kingdom from them and gave it to the rest of the nations. Jesus himself said in Matthew 21:43, Therefore the kingdom of God shall be taken from you and given to a nation, bringing forth the fruits thereof. What happened to Israel because they rejected Jesus Christ as the king of that nation? When they did reject Jesus as the king, then the work of the kingdom was taken from them. If you reject the king, you certainly cannot work for his kingdom. And so Jesus gave the opportunity to be the witnessing opportunity, the witnessing nation to the Gentiles. This will be also, that is, the time of the destruction of Jerusalem will be the day of vengeance. Luke wrote in Luke 21:22, "For these be the days of vengeance, that all things which are written may be fulfilled." That is, God's warnings to Israel down through the years by the prophets. If you don't do what I have set you aside to do as my very special people, then calamity and catastrophe will come upon you as a nation. And God warned them for hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of years. He sent prophets. They slew the prophets. He sent them ultimately his only son. They slew him. Now the vengeance of God will fall upon the nation of Israel, and it will be centered upon the city of Jerusalem. It is the beginning of what we call the Gentile times, or the times of the Gentiles. Luke 21:24. "And they shall fall by the edge of the sword," speaking of the inhabitants of the city of Jerusalem, "and shall be led away captive into all nations. And Jerusalem shall be trodden down of the Gentiles until the times of the Gentiles be fulfilled." This prophecy is for the nation of Israel. It is not for the United States of America. It is not for England. It is not for Germany. It is not for Holland. It is for the nation of Israel, because Jesus said in verse 14 of the scriptures we have read, "Then let them that be in Judea flee to the mountains." We're not talking about the times that you and I will endure under the Antichrist. We're talking about the destruction of the city of Jerusalem in 70 AD. Luke chapter 21, verse 21 tells us that it is specific that if people are outside the city of Jerusalem, do not go in. And if you're in the city of Jerusalem, then flee. What is this? The abomination of desolation. Let's do some examination of the word that's translated abomination. It means to turn away through loathing or disgust. The etymology of the word tells us that this loathing or turning away is based upon the smell that one endures through the voiding of the stomach. I don't know of anything that turns us away from something any more than being near people who void their stomachs. The smell of it turns us away, and we are shocked by it. We're not in any way pleased by it. And that's the word that's translated abomination. In Daniel, it is to be filthy or to loathe, to abhor. It is often used by the Jews to describe idol worship. The abomination. The abomination of what? Desolation. And it means to lay waste, to make totally desolate. So what of these two words, the abomination of desolation? It is that unspeakable act or thing that, because of its awfulness, brings utter desolation and destruction. In other words, there'll be something so terrible occur that desolation will follow immediately in its path. This, as Jesus referred to, is a statement that's recorded in Daniel chapter 9, verse 26 through 27. And Jesus said, it's that which was spoken of by Daniel the prophet. And Jesus continues, let him that readeth understand. Then let them that be in Judea flee to the mountains. This prophecy of Daniel was spoken of a most despicable event, so horrible in its occurrence that it would bring total desolation to the temple at Jerusalem. Jesus said, standing where it ought not. So there's something involved as far as the abomination of desolation is concerned. It has to do with something that is standing where it ought not. As best we can tell, this has reference to Roman soldiers coming into the city of Jerusalem and into the outer parts of the temple. They carried ensigns and images of the Emperor of Rome. Also, the eagles carried in front of the armies as a banner or ensign. These were considered to be of divine origin to the Roman soldiers and therefore deserved worship. And on one occasion, early in the morning, the Jewish people who came to the temple saw the Roman soldiers bowing down and worshiping the idols that were displayed on the ensigns and the banners and the flags of the Roman soldiers. Now this seems to be the abomination that would bring desolation. Think of it. When you see this abominable thing, which is the presence of the Roman soldiers in the temple of God with their idols or representatives of their idols. When you see this, then you understand that things have come to a point that God will no longer tolerate this and certain desolation will follow. The admonition, let him that readeth understand, is more the foundation for apology than for rejoicing on the part of this poor disciple. I ask the listener this morning's forgiveness, and from our Lord, his mercy. For I'm sure that I cannot tell you that I know for sure what the abomination of desolation is, but I can assure you that these people would soon understand. Whatever despicable, abominable thing occurred, the desolation would occur in 70 AD at the hand of a prince, a man who led an army by the name of Titus. Now Jesus said this would bring some very desperate moments to the people who were in Judea at the recognition and the retribution that would come at this particular time. The Bible tells us, let them that be in Judea flee to the mountains. And we're told by Josephus and other historians that there were many Christians when they saw what was happening, when they saw the city compassed about, as Luke had written in his gospel, they did flee to certain other mountains that were in the area. And let him that is on the housetop not go down into the house, neither enter therein to take anything out of the house. That is, at this particular moment, if you're on the housetop and you see these circumstances, then don't go into the house to get a garment, a coat. Go down the stairs that are on the outside of the house, like a fire escape, and flee to the mountains. And to those people who are working in the field, do not turn back again and even pick up your coat that may be lying at the end of the field. Just keep going. Don't turn back. Don't pick up a garment. This is of the time is of the essence. Those who are pregnant and or who have small children are going to find it especially difficult. Jesus said, but woe to them that are with child, to them that give suck in those days. Now, we're not talking about our day, and we're not talking about the time of the Antichrist. I don't know all of the circumstances that have to do with it. It'll be a terrible time for God's people. But what we're talking about now is the destruction of the city of Jerusalem and the dispersion of the Jewish people over all the earth. Jesus said, even pray concerning the weather. And pray ye that your flight be not in the winter. Why? Because you're going to be exposed to the elements. There will be freezing weather and illness and sickness brought on by the conditions. So pray that this will not occur during the winter months. Now, a vivid description of this is given in verse 19. For Jesus said, for in those days shall be affliction. The word means tremendous pressure, distress, and persecution. And it is the greatest suffering that any segment of humanity has endured since the beginning of the creation, which evidently is the creation of the world, and unto this time, and neither shall be. This is going to be the most difficult time for human beings since the creation of the earth and the creation of human beings up until this time, and never in the future will any people suffer like the inhabitants of Jerusalem will suffer when Titus destroys the city and destroys the temple. Jesus said that unless those days were shortened, this word shortened means to mutilate in the sense of cutting or hacking. And therefore, as it applies to time, it means to cut off a portion. God would actually shorten his time of vengeance. God is looking at the destruction of the city of Jerusalem. He's looking at the nation of Israel. And the wrath and vengeance of God has been stored for centuries. And his people whom he loved and gave laws to, and his people whom he made covenant with and who made covenant with him, a people to whom he sent men of God to encourage and to warn, and a people who despised their contact with God, who did not love God with all their heart, their souls, their mind, and their being, but who turned from him and turned from his laws, despised his holy days and despised the sacrifices that the law taught them to make to him, who misinterpreted, misapplied, turned aside in every way that we might describe people who have despised their God. They treasured up wrath to themselves. And finally, the day of God's vengeance and wrath has come, and the vengeance and anger of God is being poured out without mercy. And yet God himself looks upon the suffering of his people, looks upon the suffering of those covenant people, of the descendants of Abraham, of the seed of Abraham. He looks upon them and he says, that's enough. He shortens the planned time because the suffering is so terrible. And God looks at it and says, if I do not shorten this, there will not be a single person left. And then the descendants of Abraham would not be as the stars of heaven. My covenant with Abraham would be broken, so I must shorten the days of my vengeance. These horrors that will befall upon the people of God will create false claims. Jesus said, and then if any man shall say to you, lo, here is Christ, or lo, he is there, believe him not. Remember, this is not a person claiming to be Christ, but they are pseudo John the Baptist. They're false in that they're pointing out, there's Christ, or there's Christ, because these terrible circumstances have created in them a submission to the prophecies that they have heard and read and remembered. And so they're saying, that must be Christ over there. That must be Christ over there. John said, do not believe those statements. And then he said, for false Christs and false prophets shall rise and shall show signs and wonders to seduce, if it were possible, even the elect. Now this is during the time of the desolation, after the abomination. We're looking at the desolation, and during the desolation and the suffering, there are going to be people who are saying, these must signify the coming of Christ. And others are claiming they are Christ. But Jesus said, do not listen to them, because this is happening so that you might be seduced. And the word seduced means to make, to wander away from. So don't listen to the people who are claiming that these momentous circumstances and horrible times that they are triggering and signifying that Christ is coming, or that Christ is somewhere hidden, perhaps in the inner recesses of the temple, and just any day he'll walk forth and end this suffering. Don't believe it. It won't happen, because Christ died on Calvary 35 years before. God's people must be alert. Jesus said, take heed, behold, I have foretold you all things. Now it is my belief that everything that Jesus has said, beginning at verse 6 and ending at verse 23, have to do with the nation of Israel and have to do with the destruction of the city and of the temple. I think the things we need to look at, we'll look at next Sunday, begin in verse 24. But in those days after that tribulation, those are our days right now. Those days after that tribulation, these are the things we need to understand. Because these other things that we've read are history. Just a little bit about what was inside Jerusalem. The Jews died by thousands. More from famine and plague than from the wounds of war. Bodies could hardly be buried. Children and parents fought each other for refuse. The wife of the high priest, accustomed to walk on carpets and to eat the choicest morsels, skulked through alleys in search of scraps. Wretches who stole out at night to pick up roots were captured by the vigilant Romans and crucified, 500 and more in the night. Those who returned were robbed of their precious cargo or murdered for it. Soon it was necessary to discontinue the sacrifices which had been offered every morning and evening, and that for centuries, and thus the ceasing of the oblation. The rest of the story, as Paul Harvey would say, is this. The Jews paid for their omission. Their casualties were much greater than attended the destruction of the state in 70 AD. It is not improbable that 500,000 lives were sacrificed in the hopeless cause. Those who escaped death were rushed to the slave markets of the East or to the gladiatorial arenas in the chief cities of the West. On the site of the sanctuary, a temple was built in honor of Jupiter Capitolinus. On the south gate of the city was placed the head of a boar, the emblem of the 10th Legion. The very name of Judah was discarded, and the province which had given the Roman Legion so much trouble was named Syria Palestina. And guess what's happening today between the Palestinians and the Jews? Jews were forbidden on pain of death ever again to set foot in Jerusalem. Only on the 9th of Ab, the traditional anniversary of the destruction of the temple, could Jews pay for the right to weep on the site of the old sanctuary. For centuries thereafter, they bought their tears, weeping over the lost glories of the past, yet never abandoning the hope that someday in God's own way a restoration would come and the Holy Land would once again rise from the ruins tenderly built by Jewish hands. In 1897, the Zionist movement began. Scattered Jews began to seek a home in their ancient land. In May of 1948, Israel became a nation for the first time since A.D. 70. In 1967, she fought a war which gave her control of the city of Jerusalem for the first time in many centuries. So Israel has been reborn. We'll see what that may mean to us as we continue the study of this chapter. But it seems as we look at God's word that the days of the Gentiles may soon be over. And the catastrophic events signaling the second coming of Christ are near to beginning.